Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 225. This is the double up edition here at the Caffeination. Yeah, we're doubling up on coffee and caffeine and all other kinds of fun things. This is a highly caffeinated episode. This espresso machine could be a very bad thing for me. I got to tell you that right now. All right, like I said before, this is the Caffeination Podcast, episode number 225. Lots of fun content for you on today's show. You're going to hear about any and all of the following topics. You're going to hear about espresso, noobs, stormtroopers, NASA, the Smithsonian, Tetris, and of course, coffee. We have a fantastic lineup of real news bites, a bunch of tech cruft, and just a little bit of caffeine and food. But we also have one really fun section of the podcast returning. Yes, today we have a return of the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, with a fun song by Doug McLeod called Dubs Talkin' Politician Blues. And that's going to be up at the end of the show. We're trying this new thing out. Had a lot of people who request to have the music back, so we're going to try and do it at least once a week where we have the music at the end of the show. Hopefully that'll appease all parties involved, but I got to tell you, we tried to watch the debate, and the best thing about the debate was that, you know, like, there were a couple other people on Twitter, the debate between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton tonight. There was a bunch of people on Twitter who were watching it, and everybody just kind of did the same thing I did and tapped out after a little bit. It was just kind of meh. It just wasn't very inspiring of a debate. Maybe it got better later on. I'm going to check all the recaps afterwards, but I got to tell you, you know, I was really kind of disappointed. They're like, oh yeah, there's going to be a live web chat. Well, the place they sent you was an article, and it was just like a stream of comments under the article, and it was, you could tell that there were like shills for each one of the candidates in there. I was like, you know what? This should have been like a live chat room, like a running chat room. That would have been fun. Or, you know, maybe it was somewhere else and I missed it. And then they said, oh yeah, and it's also going to be on Facebook. I was like, okay. So I went over there and checked that out. You know what? Couldn't find it anywhere there. Maybe I'm just, you know, technologically challenged as well as to linguistically challenged at this point, but who knows? All right. If you're looking for this show, the Caffeination Podcast is located lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. That, coincidentally enough, that happens to be caffeination.com. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. All their stuff is located, lovingly nestled, again, over at techpodcasts.com. And the Caffeination is a proud Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, please head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. We have a great lineup, like I said, for you today. First of all, we wanted to start off with a couple little articles that I myself have written recently. First of all, Adopt a Noob Day 2008 went off very well. We're slowly building steam every year, we get a couple more people involved, and I think I might actually change the name next year to Teach to Tech, because I'm not sure if there's a negative connotation associated with the word noob. There shouldn't be, because it's a newbie. You're new at something. So, and there's always the detractor, the devil's advocate, who comes out, oh, you know, not everyone needs to learn how to use technology. Yeah, you're right. Not everybody does need to learn how to use technology, but there is a time and place to help those who are willing to learn and who would probably be helped to learn. So, yeah, grandma might not be on Twitter, but she'd love to learn how to file her taxes online, I'm pretty sure. And you know what? I know a lot of grandmothers out there who have email accounts and stuff like that. So, you know, it's all in how you work it. We're just trying to add more of a positive spin. I have a little article up there. It's called IT Bully, about one man's experience with a really nasty technological experience. Somebody else in the company where he worked, basically, blaming problems on him, passing the buck, doing everything you see on the Saturday Night Live skit, Nick Burns, your company's computer guy, you know, the whole top-down, you know, snarky comments and insinuations, and that's not what we're going for. We're going for much more of an altruistic purpose. So I just wanted to kind of push that across and link you to that article, because it is kind of a horrifying tale, and, you know, just... it's irritating me. And then instead of a how-to article, I want to do a no-to. So I decided to write an article about something I knew very, very well. One of the things that I deal a lot with in work is, you know, formatting documents for better printing and everything else like that. And I've realized that since it's such a vast topic, I was going to handle it piece by piece on this show. So I'm not going to go all into it, but basically I wrote a very short primer up on how to understand what color settings are in relation to different document types. And we're going to be putting out a new article every day or some every couple days about better photo printing and different things that I know from the graphical side of things. So hopefully this will help you. This article basically deals with the differences between RGB and CMYK. If you don't know what they are, you can read the article or you can listen to this quick little snippet. Basically, RGB means red, green, and blue. It's the three primary colors of light. Everything that you see is made up of percentages of those three colors in different intensities. So every pixel on your computer has those three colors in it. Everything, whether it's high def, standard def, no def, whether you're outside fishing, everything you see is all RGB. However, when you print, RGB doesn't exist. The three primary colors of pigment are cyan, magenta, and yellow, and the K is black. That means basically how dark something is. So with that in mind, you know, there's two different spectrums that get encompassed by colors that can be represented in RGB, or visible light, and then there's colors that can be represented in pigment. And they don't always match up when you're trying to print documents out. So I wrote a little primer up there to kind of understand how to tweak your documents a little bit, and just so you kind of understood the basics of what that was about, and hopefully, you know, just not necessarily how to fix the document, but if you know that it exists and you can tweak your workflow around it, or you understand why things happen, then you know you might be a little bit better off. So that's our no-to for today's episode. Hopefully you found that interesting. All right, we're going to head right on into the Real News Bites sections. This is a fun episode, I got to tell you. There's a lot of stuff floating around the internet with different and varied stories. I'm using Google Reader again for all my research, so I have a lot of varied things from the past couple days that get floating in. But up first is one of the chief reasons I love living in Philadelphia. Not just because we have good food, not just because, you know, I like the attitude of the city. You know, as snarky as it can be sometimes, I love this city, I mean, with my entire heart and soul. And, you know, every once in a while you find something that's just so fun that happens here. Like when we had the stormtroopers walk down Broad Street for the Mummers Day Parade. Well, how would you like the stormtroopers to invade a ballpark? Yeah, that's right. Members of the 501st actually invaded the Philadelphia Phillies when they played the Chicago Cubs a couple nights ago. Darth Vader had a lightsaber brawl with the Philly Fanatic, our green mascot. So it was fantastic. There's a video up. It's over at Geekadelphia.com. Great site if you're interested in geeky things within Philadelphia. So I just wanted to kind of point that out to everybody, and hopefully you found it interesting. But yeah, it's things like this that make me really proud to be a Philadelphian. And all the other stuff, and I swear if one person mentions a snowball throwing incident in the comments, I'm going to flip out. But I mean, everything else aside, Philadelphia is just a great place to live, and there's this kind of stuff. There's the, you know, Colbert being here this week. It's just kind of a fun time to be in Philadelphia. I mean, anytime's fun, but still. Moving right along, my wife sent me an article a couple weeks ago, about a fifth grader who corrected an error in the Smithsonian, she said to me that, you know, this reminds me of something that you would do. And I said, well, you know, the sad thing is you're kind of right. I did correct a mistake in a museum when I was on a ninth grade field trip, and they didn't take too kindly to it. But this fifth grader actually, you know, came up with a very, very pointed and very realistic correction to an exhibit that existed within the Tower of History in the National Museum of Natural History in the Smithsonian Institute. They had labeled one of the periods of time the Precambrian Era. Unfortunately, the Precambrian is not an actual era. It's actually a period of time anything before Cambrian. So it's not encompassed by the term era, because an era has a definitive start point and has a definitive end point. So the Smithsonian, rather than acting snarky like the museum that I was talking to in ninth grade, actually said that yes, that was was a very valid claim, and that they would they would fix it. They're going to paint over the word era. I was like, wow, that's fantastic. That's awesome. And then, of course, being the wonderful husband that I am, I forgot to include it in the show. I mean, that's great. She shows an interest in this, and then I mistakenly leave it off the docket. So, but I got reminded of the news story because there was a fun thing in that came across the desk today that basically said a German schoolboy who's only 13 actually corrected a NASA press release because they messed up their calculations. Yes, the same people who buried a Mars rover, you know, several feet below rock, forgot to carry a decimal place or something like that, forgot to carry the one in their little calculations. They basically said in the year of 2029 that there is an asteroid, which they've recently detected, that has a 1 in 45,000 chance of actually intersecting with Earth's orbit. The 13-year-old in Germany took a little look at their calculations and said, excuse me, it's not 1 in 45,000, it's 1 in 450. That's a much smaller number. And this isn't a small asteroid either. It's actually 2 miles wide. So it's pretty big. It could do a whole lot of damage. And, you know, I figure we got a good couple of years left in us. And until, Bruce Willis and Liv Tyler's boyfriend head up there to take care of it, we'll be okay for right now. But I just thought it was kind of awesome because after the 13-year-old sent a letter to the ESA, the European Space Agency, they contacted NASA. NASA said, you know what, my bad. And they're correcting it. They're saying, yes, that is correct. It's pretty cool. I mean, I really like the fact that there's this continued idea that, you know, yes, even though these grand scientific industries and these grand, I don't know what the proper word is, these large institutions, these hallmarks of learning are very amicable to changing what they say. I mean, they're not saying, you know, they're not throwing their hands up and saying, of course you're wrong. I mean, you know, and then correcting it at a later date. They're saying, no, you know what? You caught us in a big mistake. Thank you very much for the extra work you put in, and we're going to fix it. Another little fun story about a small mistake. Around 96 years ago, there was a little bit of a blip on the international radar when a ship by the name of the Titanic sank. And it's been postulated from one end of the planet to the other about what exactly sank the Titanic. Was there munitions stored in the bowels of it? Was it actually hit by a German U-boat? Again, with the Germans, you know. But no, it's there's a whole bunch of different theories. And the past 10 years, they've actually been focusing on the rivets that held the Titanic together. Because around 10 years ago, they went down, and instead of finding this massive gash in the bow of the boat, they found, you know, like 6 small but very thin slashes into the hull. Yes, it was enough to let a significant amount of water in, but it shouldn't have done what happened to the Titanic. I mean, that ship that big should not have sank that quickly. What they're doing, one of the specific researchers out there has done, is they've actually taken the actual samples of the rivets at the time and taken, you know, company documents, because the company that actually built the Titanic still exists, which is really insane and cool at the same point in time. So Harlan and Wolff in Belfast, Northern Ireland, at that point in time was building the 3 largest ships in the world. They were building the Titanic, they were building the Britannia and the Oceanic, I think. The Olympic and the Britannic. Yeah, there we go. And they were building each one of them. Each one of them required 3 million rivets. And of course, there were labor shortages, and then it turns out that they were not using the proper grade of iron for the rivets, and they didn't even use the same grade of iron for the rivets on the entire ship. So that's 3 million rivets that had to go into this thing. In the middle of the ship, where they said the most stress would be, they actually used steel rivets. And on the bow and in the stern, where they thought there would be less stress, they used iron rivets. But they used iron with a high concentration of slag, which means there's a lot of crystalline particles in the iron itself, and it's more prone to breaking, and they're much more brittle. This is all conjecture at this point, because they've examined 48 actual rivets from the ship. Now, my only problem with this is when you're looking at a sample size, 48 as compared to 3 million, it's very possible that you could get a very skewed sample one way or another. However, they're looking at company documents, and they have the orders for the lower grade of iron. So that's what I would think. And the other damning piece of evidence here is that when what they're basically saying is, if you have rivets that are substandard and you get a ship that's taking on water, what happens is the rivets aren't strong enough to hold, so they pop, and kind of like a zipper, they rip the seam of the ship open. So that would account for a lot of the quick sinking time of the actual vessel, because It basically, the ship burst itself apart. It ripped itself apart rather than just having a hole in it and sinking like it should. So they're saying if they had used the proper rivets on the entire ship, it actually would have survived long enough to for help to arrive, because it sank in under like an hour and a half or something insane like that. And so it's really kind of crazy and really kind of cool. And there's a whole little era of mystique surrounding the Titanic. And I'm not talking about the movie or anything like that. Just this massive ship that, you know, lies right now in the murky depths of the North Atlantic. And it just seems to capture everybody's imagination. So you really owe it to yourself to head on over to the New York Times to read this entire article. I mean, this is a really, really good read. And the most damning piece of evidence actually is they switched over to steel rivets at a certain point in time back from the bow of the ship. That's where those tears stopped. So as soon as they switched over to steel rivets, there was no more problems. The back end of the ship was intact. All right, moving right along, but please do go over there and read that article. I mean, that was fantastic. You can find the article and all the other links on the show notes over at caffeination.com, and that one's just labeled 96-year-old mystery solved Titanic mistake. Had to go for it, sorry. We have a bunch of tech cruft, a little bit of caffeine and food, then our PodSafe music waiting in the wings at the end, and we'll let you go on your way. All right, first up in tech cruft here, which is just random bits of fun technological know-how I found from around the internet. First up at Ogizmo, there's a do-it-yourself calculator watch. Apparently, a fun-loving geek by the name of David Jones has been using his Casio CFX-400 scientific calculator watch. I didn't even know these things existed. For the last 10 years. And he's using it every day. And apparently the guy is somebody who needs sine, cosine, and tangent, among many other things in his daily routine. And he was unable to find a suitable replacement because all of the current calculator watches only have the four functions. And that's kind of surprising that a watch from 10 years ago would be more functional than a watch from today. So what does any self-respecting engineer do? What does any gadget freak do? He decided to craft his own. He went out, found all off-the-shelf parts. He has a guide up to how to make one, or he's working on a guide right now on how to make one. It involved a two-line LCD. It has an interesting little keypad attached to it, and it, you know, form factor wise, this thing is not bad looking. It's a little wider, but it seems to be very usable. It seems to be very hardcore, and you know what? Any geek that is willing to go out there and design his own watch because he just can't stand the state of current electronics, you know, you get a place in the Geek Hall of Fame. You know, kind of like the man law table had the guy who had to cut off his own arm. You know, this is a guy who decided to make himself a cybernetic replacement to said arm after the fact. So it's just pretty cool. I just decided to pass it along to you. It's one of those things where you just kind of stand in awe. And this is the world's first, of course, according to do-it-yourself scientific calculator watch. So just fantastic. The only thing he needs to add for the next version, I guess, would actually be a four-line version that can do graphing functions as well. Because I mean, that would be pretty cool too. All right, staying in the little watch way, there's a little steampunk here, a little not so much, but because it's not actually steam. But there's a new company out there called Urwerk, U-R-W-E-R-K. Ur is the Sumerian city where approximately 6,000 years ago the current system and concept of keeping time was developed. At least the earliest reference to where we have it was codified. And Werk is the German word for work. So basically, through this conglomeration of the two, the company name came about, which I love, first of all, any name that has that much thought put into it. But they've designed a beautiful watch that I can't seem to find the price of. And if you can't find the price of, and it looks beautiful, and it's... Oh, there it is, sorry. It's a... That's an unrelated ad. I hate that. All right, so this is a beautiful watch entirely powered by compressed air. So there's tiny little valves in there that keep time through the measured release of bursts of air. So you gotta love that. That's really outside the box. That's really just strange, kind of funky, funkified. Wow, there's stuff going on in the background I didn't even know about. We're gonna stop that right there. But There's just kind of strange, fun little stuff playing around on the back end. And, you know, you gotta love anybody, any company who's willing to think that far outside the box when it comes to something as simple as, something as simple as telling time, something as simple as watchmaking. So just wanted to pass that along. Thought it was really fun and interesting. Apparently, bicycles, cyclists, and moped riders everywhere didn't want to be left out of this air-powered revolution either. A man by the name of Jen Stansfield in the University of Bristol, with a graduate degree in aeronautic design, actually designed a bicycle or a moped that is capable of going approximately 18 miles an hour and 7 miles of a range on a charge. Which, you know, if you live relatively close to where you work, that's pretty cool. I mean, this thing is entirely powered by two scuba tanks that are attached to the bottom, again through measured releases of compressed air, and which is much easier and much simpler to replace than rechargeable batteries or any of the other green technologies that are out there. And it kind of got me to thinking, it kind of got the people over at EcoGeek to start thinking as well. But I mean, this is one area of locomotion that I haven't seen tapped yet, and this is much more of a sustainable idea than trying to recharge cars or something like that. I mean, just think about it. If you had like solar powered filling stations where all they did was compress the air that was around naturally and put it back into the tanks located inside your car, I mean, this is a really workable solution at some point in time, and it's kind of interesting to see the different divergent areas in which people are designing right now, because everybody's all about the green technology, everybody's all about finding a new way to do things, and everybody's kind of focused in on the electrical cars right now, and they're saying, how can we find a way to create electricity, how can you find a way to recharge these things? You can literally recharge compressed air cylinder in under a minute, if you have a proper compressor. So this is kind of fun and kind of cool, and hopefully this technology will grow beyond it. And they're saying that there's a possibility of air-powered vehicles in 2010. So that's pretty cool. But all right, moving right along to another fun and definitely off-the-beaten-path little bit of information. There's a fun thing from over at Evil Mad Scientist Laboratories on how to create your own sawed-off USB key. Imagine a USB cable plugged into the side of your laptop and it's torn off. But, however, imagine that the actual plug of said cable was actually a hacked-together USB key, so that you had your 1 gig of storage in the front end of the cable, and it just looked like somebody had cut the cable off. First of all, this drive is never going to get stolen, I gotta tell you that. The only other problem I could see with this is that, it might not get stolen, but it's definitely running the risk of getting thrown out. So you got to head on over to evilmadscientist.com to actually check out the how-to article on how to make your own version of this. Doesn't seem to involve too much soldering or hardcore manipulation of facts or anything, but it does seem to have a large large potential for pranks being played on this. So I kind of like that in anything. So hopefully, if anybody out there actually attempts this, just send us in some pictures or send us a link to where you do it. All right, now next up, second to last little article we got here in the TechCruft section at the Cafe Nation is kids today have all the fun. And I'm serious about this. There is crazy toys that do absolutely everything. There's tiny little RC helicopters that you can fly through a dollhouse. I saw them on a commercial today. Of course, it's only 10 minutes of fly time, but for like a 6-hour charge or something like that. But this doesn't begin to hold a candle to some of the stranger advances in children's toys we've seen recently. I'm sure everybody out there remembers those old zip track cars that you used to have. It used to be two cars, one on each track, and they went around kind of like an oval, little Indy 500 in your living room. They were usually around 3 or 4 feet long, maybe 1 or 2 feet wide. And, they were really kind of fun and everything, but how would you like to have a 5-foot-long inflatable water boat challenge course? I know it's a little bit strange sounding, but RC boat speedboat challenge. So basically, you have the kit comes with a 5-foot by 3-foot inflatable swimming pool with a track built into it, little obstacle courses, I'm pretty sure a ramp or something like that, and the idea is that you can control these little RC speedboats to run around the tracks. So this isn't like you're locking it into a tiny little metal track or anything like that. This is insanity, and they're saying it's for use indoors or out, but I agree with the people who were working on the article over at I think this was at device.com. I agree with them that all the water toys, anything that has this amount of water involved is definitely going to be a little backyard backyard play. But I just thought it was kind of fun, so I thought I'd pass it along. And next up here, in the last little story we have in TechCraft section before we pass you on to the caffeine and food fun, is the trestling. It's a new sport that only a geek could make, but it's not very many geeks that I know that are into arm wrestling. But I know a lot of people who are really into Tetris. How would you like to take these two and mix them? All right, now imagine two competitors are facing off, their hands locked in Mortal Kombat as their grip is tested, you know, moving left and right on the pad to see who wins. Now, okay, as the arm moves left and right, it hits a bumper left or right, which moves both pieces on two competing Tetris boards to the left or to the right, respectively. So you would take your hand and you would move it left if you wanted to move your piece left. But unless your opponent wants to move their piece left as well, they're going to fight you to stop you from doing that, so, which is kind of cool. But the rotation is worked by a button on either side of it, so that's kind of fun as well. And I think the rotation happens kind of in tandem as well. I'm not sure, although you might be able to do that separately. I got to tell you, you know, this is one of those things that's really kind of hard to nail down, hard to pick apart with just the my words to hold it. It's really kind of cool, really kind of interesting. What I think is they should actually spread the V out for the actual arm wrestling part, because it looked like there was maybe like 5 or 6 degrees of actual tweakage that the arm would hit, between hitting bumpers or something like that. Unfortunately, the video involves a little Eye of the Tiger action, so if you're offended by that, and you probably should be, then you might not want to watch it, but it's really kind of cool. Seems kind of fun and innovative all in the same little thing, so I thought I'd pass it along to everybody out there and see what everybody thought of that. All right, that about wraps up the TechCraft section. Two quick little comments in the caffeine and food section. First off, this story is making the rounds. There's a place called the Roasting Plant Coffee Company in New York that has built an entire coffee shop into a factory, sort of. The contraption on the inside is the JavaBot. This thing's basic idea is to combine computers and coffee, which for some reason sounds familiar to combine some kind of high technology and coffee. I don't know where I've heard that before, but the idea is that there's 7 different kinds of unroasted beans. You pick your varietals and the blend that you would like to see come out. It roasts them in front of you. It moves them along the pneumatic tube. It's an entire experience. So you're walking into this one long hallway. If you thought you paid for the experience with Starbucks, I don't know how much the actual drinks are, but you can set the roasting temperature. You can set how dark or how light you'd like them roasted. You can select the grind, how fine or how coarse you'd like it ground, how you'd like it brewed, what the condiments you'd like. So this is all one long setup. And after it kind of finds your little flavor profile, after it kind of picks out how you would like to see your coffee come out, then what it does is it saves that, and I don't know, some kind of customer appreciation card or something like that, but it is capable of reproducing this exact brew in 30 seconds. I don't know how. I mean, I didn't think it's possible to roast coffee beans that quickly unless they have a selection of pre-roasted ones to certain levels, and then they kind of mix and match. But I mean, I would really kind of like to give that a shot. You know, I mean, maybe just go up there for a little taste test or something, but I know I still have to do the whole taste test for the Starbucks Pike's Place blend, but, you know, we'll see with that. Now, that aside, I've been corrected by a couple people in emails. Thank you very much, everybody who did so. Espresso is not actually a drink best served, on the most part, by single varieties. So it's not like you just use a Sumatran or you just use like a really dark roasted coffee. They don't have to be dark roasted. In fact, most of the better espressos are made through blends. So there's plenty of different places that you can actually get an espresso blend. And as soon as I've tried out a couple of them, I'll pass my findings upon to you. So I apologize for my misspeak, and I thank you for your willingness to correct me on it. All right, now the second thing we have up here is I did have to tell you that perfection is a very hard thing to reach. So as I've been trying to get my espresso machine to produce correct espresso and to get a good, really good shot of espresso at it, I at one point had 6 shots of espresso in probably around 3 hours. So you need to kind of either have somebody else there with you to taste test who likes espresso, or you need to kind of spread your testing out. Just a little personal note there. All right, that about wraps up the caffeine and food section. Not a lot of information in that one today, but I do have a fantastic PodSafe Music Network song. This is Doug McLeod with Doug Dubs Talking Politician Blues. After hearing all the different lip service and all the different fun things that were talked about on today's debate, I decided to kind of play it on out here with this fun piece of PodSafe Music. It's a really good bluesy little track from music.podshow.com. Here's Doug McLeod with Dubs Talking Politician Blues.
Now I gotta talk about some of these politicians. Sure got my world in a sorry condition. They say one thing, but they mean another. That's a very worrisome thing, my brother. Say they're talking clear, but it sure sound hazy. Ain't doing nothing but driving old Dub crazy. Can't balance a budget, but they can spend my money. You tell me if something ain't going on funny. Sometimes I think they just educated fools. Ain't doing much to help the school. City school just sliding in ruin, and sometimes I wonder, do they know what they're doing? Would you get my BB gun? No, I don't want to kill him, but I sure would like to hurt him some. Now to raise money, they got a lottery. That's a lot of slipping and sliding, if you ask me. The money's funny, and a change is strange, 'cause it ain't nothing but a new numbers game. Out on the street, you know what I'm talking about. You see, the odds always in favor of the house. And every week, you put your little $20 in, and they're grinning in your face, 'cause it's so hard to win. They said the lottery was going to help the school. That's what they promised it would do. But they're cutting arts because money's so tight. And I got to wonder, how do they sleep at night? Man, you get my BB gun. No, I don't want to kill him, but I sure would like to hurt him some. This country, we got kids that don't eat. Vietnam War veterans still begging the street. Politicians say he gotta make more cuts. But you think his salary is something he'll touch? Healthcare, now that's a mess. Ain't done much to help that yet. Politicians say, don't worry, there gonna be better days, and I'm gonna start working on it as soon as I vote myself a raise. Now there's a way to get out from under this joke. We need all the people to get out and vote. Don't sit on the couch, watch the news and complain. You gotta get off your butt if you're going to implement change. But in the meantime, would you get my BB gun? No, I don't want to kill him. But I sure would like to hurt him, son. Now, folks, those are just my views. And you're entitled to your views, too. 'Cause in America, we still got the right to choose. And that's why I wrote Dubs Talking Politicians Blues.
I Again, that was Dubs Talking Politician Blues from Doug McCloud. You gotta love that. It's just a fun little lighthearted romp talking about politics and everything else like that. It's not something I usually discuss too much on the Caffeination here, but just thought I'd touch on it since there's a big debate going on still, and I've been going for quite a while here on this episode. I'm gonna have to cut it down yet again. I talk too much. All right. I'd like to thank everybody for listening here at the Caffeination Podcast. This has been the Double Up, Double Shot of Espresso Powered Edition here at the Caffeination. We're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. And we're a Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this episode here at the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Please send your comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you got coming to caffeination@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.